Hi, everybody. This is Claire Casey, and today I'm talking with Dr. Bob Huizenga, who is a marriage and family therapist and author of Break Free from the Affair. And he will tell you himself that no number of professional degrees or years of experience or letters after your name, and he has plenty of those, means that your marriage or relationship is immune from trouble. He's had it just like every committed relationship has it. He understands the pain and the confusion and fears around this topic that we're going to talk about today. His program, Break Free from the Affair, teaches people about the seven different kinds of affairs. And this is what kind of wowed me, how you can accurately predict your future and the future of the affair by pinpointing and understanding the dynamics of the one you're dealing with. He has an e-course called How to Save Your Marriage at saveamarriageforever.com. And he does plenty of live coaching sessions and has just helped thousands of women and men understand, work through, and heal their relationships. So welcome to you, Dr. Huizenga.
Thank you, Claire. I'm glad I'm here.
He's here to talk to us today about cheating. Big topic, important topic, something he knows a lot about from dealing with so many different couples around the world. He's going to share with us the one indicator that will let you know if your man is cheating. He will also show us how we can predict the odds of his cheating. And he'll answer three enormous questions. And those are, is it true that once a cheater, always a cheater? You guys have heard that said before. Also, number two, how can you prevent him from cheating? And finally, what's the first step you take if you discover your man cheating? But before we begin, Dr. Huizenga, maybe you can help us just by giving us a handle on what cheating is. Can you define it so that we're all talking about the same thing? And also tell us if it applies to committed but unmarried couples.
Sure, thanks. Cheating applies in any relationship of what I call emotional investment. So if you have a relationship of emotional investment, be it that you're married or dating with someone with the intent of having a committed relationship. Cheating is involved when primarily there are secrets. In all my work with people, I've had some 25,000 hours of direct face-to-face talking with people about their marriage, about relationships. The thing that pops out to me, that sticks out to me when people enter into the realm of cheating is that cheating involves secrets. And the spouse who is cheated upon often says, I've been betrayed. Mm. I've cheated. I didn't know this was happening. He's lied to me. And the lies are almost worse than the fact that he may be sexually acting out with someone else. Secrets are powerful. Secrets kill relationships, I believe. So that whole area of secrets, betrayal, I think defines the power and the pain of cheating or infidelity.
You know, sorry for interrupting you. I just got to say, it's funny you should say the thing about secrecy, because it's what gets me so frustrated with. I was watching episodes of Downton Abbey, sort of the hot TV show, I guess, and I had downloaded it, and I thought, you know, these people would not be having this problem if they would just tell each other, you know, if they wouldn't keep the secret, which I know people are laughing at me now and saying, but that's what drove the whole plot. I hate that.
That's a drama of it too, you know?
Yeah.
And many of us are addicted to drama. We see it on TV, so we think life should be like that.
And that just feeds the cheating.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Oh, that's a shame. Okay, let me go back and clarify something. You said that you defined it by any time there's an emotional investment, and even in unmarried couples, with people who had the intent to commit. In other words, people who weren't exclusive yet, but who were talking about being exclusive? Say more about that.
Okay. I think when you're in a relation, when a person is in a relationship and they see it as exclusive, in other words, I expect that at some point in this relationship, and maybe right now, I will be the only person that you are emotionally connected with to an intense degree.
Okay. And you have to have this explicitly agreed upon, right? That's what I would guess. Otherwise, because like most women will say, well, I'm committed to him. And yet they haven't explicitly agreed with the guy. And the guy's like, well, I didn't say I was committed. I'm playing the field.
Exactly. That's an issue. Sure.
So, okay. So anyway.
Sees it as cheating and he doesn't.
Right. So it might be important just to say, you guys, all of you who are in relationships and you don't know whether you're in a committed relationship or you think that you are and don't know if he is, then you may not be in a committed relationship. So find out to have the conversation.
Yeah, let's take that a step further then and say what's important for you is to talk about your expectations regarding the relationship and listen to him as he explains his expectations. And also talk about boundaries in the relationship. What are the boundaries here? What kind of expectations do we have about where lines are going to be drawn?
Yes, excellent.
That might be difficult to talk about, especially in the beginning stages of a relationship. But at some point, I think that has to be in the back of your mind if you are concerned about trust.
Right. Okay, good. Thanks for taking some time on that. So now we're still looking at a definition of cheating as where you have this kind of emotional commitment within a committed relationship.
Within a relationship of the intense emotional involvement.
Okay, excellent. And this applies definitely to not just married couples, but couples who have said very clearly, this is what our relationship looks like. Can you include or maybe segue for a second into internet cheating?
Okay, sure.
And just talk to us about what that looks like, how that.
Yeah, that's a great segue because my experience with internet cheating, and it happens a tremendous amount, is that men see it much differently than women. For men who are involved in internet cheating, and let's define what that may be, okay? Internet cheating may be involvement in chat rooms. It may be they have dating sites that they are members of. It may be pornography. I know a number of men, I've talked to a number of men who have lists of women that they contact via the internet in all different sorts of relationships. So for men, and they often say, that's no big deal. It's just a game. And often they see it as a game, whereas a woman, I believe, and I don't always like using stereotypes, but it's more an issue of trust and, again, breaking down some expectations and boundaries that she thought were in the relationship. So I think there's a huge difference in how the genders approach internet relationships. Let's call them internet relationships of different varieties.
So what's the key to figuring out how to navigate with that? Is it still just what you were saying before, being real clear about your expectations and your boundaries?
Right. And I think also talk about, if you can, at some point in your relationship, what the fantasies are, what the sexual fantasies are, pay attention to the degree and growth of intimacy in a marriage or in a relationship, because often internet cheating is a way for someone to play out their fantasies or their illusions about relationships. It's a way for them sometimes to explore their own sexual identity. So if those issues can be talked about without having to go to the internet and act out or play them out in some kind of fantasy, that would be ideal in a relationship. I've said enough on that, I think.
No, I think that's very to the point and very helpful to all of us and everyone listening. So, okay, to shift back to when you and I first spoke about this, you said that there was one indicator that will let you know if a man is cheating. What is that indicator?
It's a person's gut. Your internal response to that person will tell you. It's very, very accurate. I would say 90% of the time.
Wow.
In terms of letting a person know that the other person is cheating. Here's what happens often. I've dealt with a lot of people who discover that their spouse is cheating or their partner is cheating, and they have a tremendous desire to know what happened. They want the details. They want to go back and they want to know, when did you first meet? You know, when did you first have sex? What was it like? What exactly do you see in this other person? So there's often a tremendous, tremendous need to know. And the reason why the betrayed spouse needs to know so many details is that she, for example, is working on the capacity to trust her own intuition. Because way back when he was beginning to cheat, she knew it. Her gut said, something's not quite right here. But she didn't say anything. Okay, because you know it's really hard to bring stuff up like that. Plus, most of us don't want to even face that possibility or fact. So she says, I need to know what happened on July 9, because on July 9, I remember just feeling miserable all day. Or you came home and something within me went kind of crazy, and I need to know what that was. So our intuition is very, very powerful in knowing the truth of the more subtle aspects of what's happening around us. And if you can learn to trust your intuition or your gut, you will know.
Is that true for guys too?
Do they
have gut instinct over it?
Of course. Men are no different women in many ways.
Because I think of women as being much more tuned into the subtle flow of emotion and the unspoken stuff that's going on than I think of guys as being much more...
Guys are just as intuitive and emotional as women.
Really? Wow.
They just show it differently. They cope differently with it. Let's put it that way. Most men, when they discover that their partner is having an affair, they become basket cases. I mean, it is totally, totally devastating, and feelings are all over the place.
Wow.
So men have strong feelings.
Well, I know they have strong feelings. I didn't mean to say they didn't, but yeah, I was curious about their intuition, and you're saying, yes, in fact, they have that ability, just like we always brag about how women have it. Guys have it too. They sense it, even if they can't or don't maybe express it in the same way we do.
Yeah, I think that's true, Claire, sure.
Wow. Okay, well, are there, so if the one indicator is your gut, are there other signs as well?
Sure, there are a lot of signs usually, and it depends upon your partner. I think another key is if you begin to notice different behaviors, if patterns change. It's more sex, or it's less sex, or it's different kinds of sex. A frequent utterance is if the cheating spouse does, or his cheating partner does indeed give you a hint, the phrase is often, I'm not quite sure I'm in love with you anymore. That's often an indication that there may be someone else in that person's life.
Huh.
There are a lot of different clues that you can pick up on, but the big ones are, you know, my intuition tells me something is really off, something's changing, and then you begin to notice changes in behaviors. And it's usually a person who makes a shift in almost 180 degrees. For example, someone who was maybe more withdrawn becomes even more withdrawn, or becomes more more involved in certain ways, someone who gets more angry, and the anger is used to push you away. So there are a lot of different behaviors, but the bottom line is the behaviors are different than what you're normally accustomed to.
Now, you said something just a minute ago, the phrase, "I'm not sure I'm in love with you anymore." Do even established couples still associate like the more mature and advanced kind of love? Do they still call that being in love? Because I really strongly associate being in love with that crazy out of control stuff, which definitely happens when you're having an affair. I know that's the case, but it's not really so much what I look at when I look at mature, established, committed relationships.
Mm-hmm. Well, when a mature, established relationship probably won't have an affair in it. Someone who appears to be mature and becomes involved in an affair, the maturity's out the window. I mean, that type of behavior no longer is evident. And so you come up with crazy phrases like, you know, "I'm not quite sure I'm in love with you anymore. I love you, but I'm not in love with you."
Ah, so that person is saying, yeah, I had that in love. We had that in love thing, and now I'm having it again. So I don't know, you know, what does that do to my original relationship?
Well, that phrase is often used to begin to put a wedge between himself and his partner.
A lot of pain in that, huh?
Huge, huge. Often it's huge. It's often a shock. Because, again, the affair is a secret, and the betrayed spouse has no clue where this is coming from. No clue, often. You know, at a conscious level. I mean, after a while, she may say, "Oh yeah, now I've begun to putting pieces of the puzzle together here." But initially, it's often a shock. Where in the world did this come from? What are you talking about? What do you mean?
Right.
Or, you know, they get angry or go and cry for a day. You know,
it's crushing.
It's crushing. Yeah, exactly. Good word.
So, okay, I want to skip ahead. Now, we talked about, we said we would talk about how to prevent, or no. I want to say, go to what's the first step. So, because I'm in this space that you've described about, you know, in the examples we've described, the man may say a phrase like, "I'm not sure I'm in love with you anymore," or she just knows in her gut that something's wrong. Mm-hmm. And maybe they... Maybe it outs, you know, it comes out. And what do you do now? What's the first step?
Okay, the first step that I recommend is to do nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Wow.
Because what typically happens is a person who is in shock and discovers the infidelity out of her own pain, her own deep, unmitting pain, begins to do crazy things. And she makes all kinds of statements and promises that, in essence, don't work. They continue to push the other person away. She may say, for example, "I really, really love you, and I want us to work on the marriage, or I want us to work on the relationship." That's not a good thing to say. Or she may get out the Bible or some kind of moral injunction, or use Dr. Orr or somebody and start beating him over the head, saying, "You're doing the wrong thing," or, you know, try to persuade him to stop. Or she may get family or friends involved, trying to find allies, and it becomes even more of a drama. She may suggest counseling. And I, when a person's having an affair, I really strongly recommend that you do not go to counseling.
Really? Okay. Time out. Tell me why.
It doesn't work. I've counseled with thousands of couples, and when there's affair involved, therapy never works, because the person who's having an affair is often dragged into counseling and often uses it as an excuse to continue the affair or get out of the, to get out of the marriage. See, I've tried counseling and it just doesn't work. So, you see, and they will sabotage the therapy.
Huh.
Wow. Or the secret is still there. The secret does not come out. And it's like, you know, you're talking to each other and yet there's this elephant in the room that nobody talks about. And so you go nowhere. As a matter of fact, the couple leaves the therapy session feeling worse because at some level, the issue is not being addressed. It just makes it takes an exceptional therapist to work through that. And I as a therapist found it extremely difficult to work through that and often did not with a couple.
All right. So if you don't want to say all those, make all those promises, like, I really, really love you, I want to work on this, I will make it better. This is mm-hmm. the cheated on person. Or getting their friends or family involved or suggesting counseling. What are some other crazy impulses that you have to ignore?
Well, I think there's the polarity of either raging mm-hmm. and throwing him or her out mm-hmm. or crawling up into a ball in the corner of the room and doing nothing, becoming a victim. And what I suggest is that people take 2 weeks to, first of all, get support. All right, go online, find somebody that you can talk to outside of family or friends. Get some support. Get my book, Break Free from the Affair. Learn about infidelity. Because we, in our culture, know very, very, very little about infidelity and the complexity of infidelity. And often when someone reads my book, and they can read it in about 3 hours, there's a tremendous amount of relief because all of a sudden they begin to see patterns and they begin to understand what's happening. So knowledge at that point is extremely, extremely powerful. And it calms a lot of the reactive type of feelings that a person has when they first discover the infidelity.
That actually makes a lot of sense now that I think about it, because we're always saying, and I know my husband and I have said this to each other a number of times over the years, when things are really crazy, and it doesn't even have to have anything to do with sexuality or an affair, when things are crazy is not the time to make big decisions, big
exactly.
life decisions.
Exactly. Exactly.
So I guess on reflection now, that makes a lot of sense. You're saying take 2 weeks.
2 weeks. Mm-hmm. Because often the person who's having an affair knows that the relationship is temporary, that the affair relationship is temporary. Very seldom in an affair is an affair relationship going to work. And the cheating spouse knows that. At some level, they know that. They know that at some level, they're dealing with their own personal issue here that they're trying to address, although in a crazy way, but they're still trying to address it. And it's important for the betrayed spouse or the betrayed partner to know that and to say, you're having an affair. This is stupid, and it's your problem. I don't know what in the world you're trying to do here, but your life's going to go down the tubes, and I think a part of you knows it, and I don't want to watch it.
Wow.
I don't want to be part of it. I'm healthy.
That's a really powerful position.
Yeah, this is crazy. I always say that infidelity is an act of temporary insanity, and all maturity and all wisdom goes out the window. Infidelity or affairs are motivated either by personal needs, a person's personal need system, or hormones, and it's usually a personal need system that they haven't fully been aware of or come to terms with in their life.
Personal,
and it's been haunting them forever.
What kind of personal needs?
Well, I have a list of 200 of them.
Oh my goodness.
Well, let's see. Okay, affair number four, I call I fell out of love and just love being in love. Okay, that's a type of an affair, mm-hmm. which is motivated by personal need to be special. to be adored,
right?
To be close to someone,
right?
And that need predominates then when someone says, "I just need to feel in love." It's that high. It's that emotional high that a person needs to feel to believe that they have validity in life.
Yeah. So it sort of naturally allows a person to wander into a cheating relationship or an extramarital, extra commitment relationship.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
That makes a lot of sense. So do nothing for 2 weeks. Not exactly do nothing. Don't give in to all the impulses.
Oh yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, that's a good way of saying it. Right.
For two weeks, while
shift your focus to what you can learn and what you need at that particular point in time.
Right. Right. Okay. And I want to shift backwards a little bit because I got ahead of the gun a little.
Okay.
And ask you some of the other things that you said you could share with all of us, which is, can you predict? I mean, this is related. Can you predict the odds that someone will cheat? That a man will cheat?
Sure. I can also let you know probably how long the affair relationship is going to last.
Wow. How does that work?
Let me go through quickly, if I can, the seven types of affairs that I've identified in my research and my work with a lot of people. Well, the first affair I call "My Marriage Made Me Do It," and this is a person who focuses externally on other people. Other people become their savior, or other people become their focal point.
Mm-hmm.
And they're usually very angry because of that. And so they will say, okay, I'm having an affair because I have a lousy marriage. Okay. I'm having an affair because you are such a bitchy wife.
Right? Mm-hmm.
Or somehow put the blame on something outside of him or herself. And a person who continues that pattern, who continues that theme in life, will continue to find external sources to blame or to focus on. So if a person, if the cheating spouse says eventually, you know what, this is not working for me, he becomes banged by some realities of his behavior, and finally says, you know, I need to assume responsibility for myself and not blame other people, then the chances of him having an affair again are mitigated. They're much, much less.
That makes sense.
Okay. Yeah. Affair number two is I can't say no. This person usually has an addictive personality. They are grabbed by something and it seems to have a hold on them, and they give it their control and their power.
Mm-hmm.
So someone here is addicted to pornography or to strip clubs or dating sites or internet chat rooms, and it tends to become worse and worse and worse. And that person typically will continue to have affairs until they discover that their life is out of control, and they say, I want something else. And those affairs are usually temporary, very, very brief. Let me go back to number one, my marriage made me do it. These affairs tend to be longer, 6 to 12 months, I would say, in nature. Affair number three, I don't want to say no. This is your philanderer who thinks he's entitled.
Mm.
Such a great guy, and women ought to adore him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the spoiled little boy that got all of mommy's attention. And so he expects women are going to treat him like that, and that he can use women and there's nothing wrong with that. And a way to confront this affair is usually only through consequences of behavior. And this kind of person will continue to probably cheat. And if you want to use the phrase, once a cheater, always a cheater, this probably will apply to this person, unless there's a tremendous, tremendous wake-up call here in terms of some reality check. Number four, I fell out of love and just love being in love. This is your emotional affair where someone's highly emotionally entangled with someone else. They're usually fairly short term, especially when The betrayed spouse kind of backs away and gives time for the affair relationship to work itself out, because eventually the person who's cheating will discover that what he really wants is, he wants an illusion. He's focusing on an idealized person that he wants a relationship with. And when you wake up in the morning next to a person who's got bad breath and stink, I mean, that shoots that all to hell.
Right.
So right. Then that relationship, and the reality of that relationship, is exposed. Affair number five, I want to get back at you. And this is an affair, a revenge affair, I call it. And they're very short-term in nature, usually, unless it's a rage affair. Now, I make a distinction here between resentment and frustration. I want to get back at you because I didn't get this, because my needs weren't met. Those affairs usually are fairly temporary. If someone's raging and having an affair because they're raging at women, then there's a likelihood that the affairs are going to be more in number.
You know what's kind of horrifying about some of the thought of some of this is being that woman with whom this man is having that affair,
mm-hmm.
And receiving that kind of attention, which is driven by, you know, his rage at someone else. That's just creepy.
That is creepy. That can be creepy, and that's not healthy.
Sure. And,
yeah, in some cases. I recommend people get away from that relationship if it's a rage relationship. I was working with a woman who was stabbed in the bathtub by her husband, and I learned then that we have to be very careful about rage relationships, and do everything to protect ourselves first.
Wow, that's pretty scary.
Yeah. I don't want to scare people because, you know, I'm talking about extreme cases here.
Right.
And I'm talking about categories. And let's face it, we can't put people in categories, but there are some patterns here.
Right.
So I want people to be aware of patterns.
Yeah.
Each pattern has an intensity level to it, a frequency level to it.
So yeah.
If your pattern is happens a lot and there's a lot of intensity to it, it's a huge red flag.
You know, and I would much rather know. I would much rather know these patterns.
Yeah.
And I think everyone listening is saying, yeah, please, even if it takes us to kind of a creepy place sometimes, let's at least know about this.
Yeah, there are creepy places.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we can learn what they are and how to avoid them or how to deal with them, sure.
Right. Okay,
Number seven, I want to be close to somebody but can't stand intimacy. All right, this is a person who's cheating because they want to maintain a distance balance in their relationships. And often these affairs are long-term. They can last for years. And the betrayed spouse never really knows. The cheating spouse often is very distant and aloof, maybe a very professional person, focuses on work, but they have a tremendous fear of being close, or not of being close, but of being intimate, as I say. So they have an affair to... kind of balance that issue in their life. And these affairs may be fairly long-term in nature.
You said number seven. I think we skipped number six. What was that one?
I need to prove my desirability.
Yes.
Okay. These affairs are usually short-term. And if they do indeed happen at all, I was coaching a woman who, for some strange reason... went out and had a one-night affair, one-night fling. That was all she did. But the purpose of that for her was to work through some kind of sexual confusion that she had, and it worked for her. I mean, that was the only affair that she had, the only time that she did it, and after that, there was some kind of resolution at some level. I don't know exactly what happened, but many of us need to prove our desirability. Especially at the sexual level, because there's so much in our culture that says we're not okay sexually. From a very early age, we learn that. So someone may be involved in an affair to get the affirmation that they indeed are desirable. on a number of levels.
That doesn't seem like a good way to get your your needs met.
None of infidelity is not a good way to approach life. Hmm. It's a self-defeating act, mm-hmm. regardless of what type of affair it is.
Well, clearly, because it destroys relationships as opposed to builds them.
And it destroys a person.
Yeah.
I say to people, they say, well, our marriage is being destroyed here by this affair. And I say, hold it just a minute. He's destroying himself.
Hmm.
Right? Not destroying you. His affair really has nothing whatsoever to do with you. He's dealing with some kind of evil in his life or some kind of lack in his life, and it really doesn't say anything about you. Now, that's hard for us to believe because we're led to believe that in our culture, and the therapeutic community says this all the time, well, what's wrong with you? Why can't you keep your man? Weren't you giving him enough sex? Or weren't you paying him enough attention? Did you take him for granted? I mean, we hear all this around us that the person who was betrayed in some way was responsible for the affair. I say no. I say no to that.
Right. I think that's probably one of the most valuable things we've hit on during this short period of time is that, and Mike and I both say it a lot, which when things like that happen, it's not about you. It's about him.
Mm-hmm.
He clearly had, you didn't drive him to do this, although he might put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And he might even sell you on that.
Right. And other people will try and sell you on that.
Yeah. Well, he's going to sell you something probably.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever it is, he's going to try and make it look different than it really is, which is something inside of him that's out of balance, out of order, or wrongly, set up, or inappropriate, or unhealthy, or immature, whatever those words are that you want to apply to it,
mm-hmm.
probably not as helpful as the simple fact of saying, honey, this isn't about you, this is about him.
Yeah. Let me go back here a minute and talk a little bit about marriage counseling again and why I don't recommend it, because I would say 95% of the therapists have not been trained in infidelity. And so when a couple goes in to see a therapist and one of them is having an affair, the approach the therapist will use is, let's work on the marriage. What's wrong with the marriage? And that slams the betrayed spouse right in the face and says, there must be something wrong with you. And from that point, I don't think counseling will ever work.
Hmm. Because, and also the fact that he's probably been coerced there, dragged there against his will. If he's the one with issues and he's the one who's being dragged in, that doesn't sound like a good setup.
No, it's not. Or he may be there to save face or maintain his reputation of some kind. There are a number of reasons, but none of them are really helpful.
You know, that makes a lot more sense to me now, just a whole lot more. I mean, I know you said it earlier, but just thinking about the fact that therapy, he's resistant to therapy most likely, and that's probably the thing he personally needs, as
mm-hmm.
opposed to the marriage needs. And talk to me, too, about, you said most therapists aren't trained in infidelity. That sort of surprises me.
I never was.
And you have all these degrees too. How does that slip through?
I think it's lack of time, when you go through grad school, you want to get me on this? Get me going. Grad schools are geared toward insurance companies. Okay, because insurance companies pay for therapy. And when you go to therapy, you are given a label, a sick dysfunctional label. And you must have a sick dysfunctional label if you want insurance.
Yeah.
I never accepted insurance. I refused to work with insurance companies for that very reason. I never did. And so therapy is, you have to train therapists to diagnose problems. And and use the medical model. And so and nowadays, therapy is often brief because insurance won't pay for a number of sessions. And so a lot of graduate schools, as I understand it, focus on brief solution-oriented therapy. Anyway, I could say a lot about that, but I think our system is missing the point here.
That's really interesting. And I know we didn't really plan to even go there. I was just so shocked by the fact that traditional education of trained therapists completely overlooks what is such a huge issue in human lives.
There are some therapists that can get training in this, but usually you have to go to workshops. Mm-hmm. After your practice is set up. It's something that you have to want to learn, but I don't think there's a great emphasis on it in graduate schools, at least, and probably not the majority of them. You may have a course or two in it, but to really get the complexity of infidelity, you need to really work at that, which I've done in the past 5-6 years, because I knew it was such a huge issue for people. People who go into therapy, I would say 70% of the couples have one spouse that's probably cheating at some level.
Wow. That's a whole nother conversation probably at some point.
Sure.
It is. It's fairly amazing. I don't want us to close without at least talking about what we have promised, which is how can we prevent a man from cheating? And I have a couple more questions that sort of are hanging on in my head that I think some of our listeners may have too, but I want to be sure and touch on that one. So you want to just take that big one on? How can we prevent a man from cheating?
I don't think you can. You can't use a direct frontal approach. Cheating is part of our coping patterns. And I often say to people, his decision to cheat was made long before he met you.
Hmm.
Okay, because there are particular patterns in his or his life that indicate that he will stray. Now, let me say this also. I believe that most of us, if not all of us, in our lifetime encounter 2 to 4 other people that we're highly attracted to other than our partner or our spouse. It just happens. We bump into people where there's an attraction. And the issue is, how do we deal with this attraction? How do we cope with it? And so the temptation, I think, is always there. And a person who has a weak identity, let me say this, a weak identity, a little awareness of himself will bow probably to that temptation in one way or another. What you can do to prevent it, here's something kind of weird maybe, but find out how many times your partner fell in love and was dumped when he was a teenager. Okay? And it has to be 4 or more times. If he fell in love and was dumped as a teenager 4 or more times, he probably won't have an affair.
Huh.
An affair is an attempt to work through our psychosexual development. And our psychosexual development occurs ages 13 through 16, 17, somewhere in there. And it usually involves some experimentation, and it usually involves facing that issue head on at that particular point in time. So a red flag is, an adolescent that was marked by sexual confusion or sexual abuse, perhaps. There's a lot of affairs that garner around sexual abuse. So, if you start talking about those kinds of things, I think that's going to be preventive. Another thing you can talk about, what kind of sexual fantasies do you have? We all have them at some level. And if you can talk about those as a partner in a non-threatening way, that also relieves some pressure, I think, in terms of the capacity or the desire to stray.
That's interesting. And it's especially interesting when I think about the fact that so much of an affair isn't necessarily directly about the sex.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It's about the person and how they feel about themselves and what they, you know, what kind of issues they have.
Right. It's how they think and see themselves as a sexual person.
Right.
So, or an emotionally or as an emotional person, or as a person who has value in the eyes of someone else.
So I think that I like that, and I find it interesting, and I'm glad that you said the first thing, which was find out how many times he was in love as a teenager or a young adult and was dumped, which mm-hmm. gives us the opportunity to work, to practice, you know, to work yeah, through right. stuff, figure right. things out. That's an intriguing thing. And then asking about the sexual fantasies that he has and offering some kind of safe arena in which to talk about. And
right.
That doesn't necessarily mean you're going to do them
No, no.
But they're in the conversation. They're in the relationship. They're in the space between you.
Right. And expect that he's going to have sexual fantasies and that you're probably going to have sexual fantasies and not be threatened by it.
It's, right.
It's not a statement about your value.
Right.
As a person.
Wow. That, any others? Those are brilliant. Do you have any others?
No, that's all I got right now.
That's a lot, though. I feel like we've gotten so much good stuff out of this. In fact, I'm almost reluctant to ask. I have other questions probably for another call about things like about forgiveness and or recovery mm-hmm. and what that looks like. And also, I'm also wanting to ask little questions about that whole detail thing, you know, when it first comes around and you said the woman is working through her issues of, should I trust my gut?
Mm-hmm.
So she wants to know all the details. When did it happen? How did it happen? What did you do? How did it go? All mm-hmm. those things. And I have more, you know, should we just like stomp those down, just hold those back because they're not going to get us forward. And yet I think, well, maybe they would get us forward. Maybe she needs to say, I've got to get better at trusting my gut.
Mm-hmm. Trust is a huge trust. An affair, infidelity is a violation of trust. And rebuilding that trust takes months, if not years, for people. And I've dealt with many who 5-6 years later say, I just can't trust him anymore. I just can't do it. I've tried and I just can't.
It's wow. Good. That was that's some trust that was really kind of exploded there.
Well, most of us are not taught to trust ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
We don't go to school on, you know, how do you really, what's really going on within you? We focus more on those things outside of ourselves. So most of us don't have much pertinent information in terms of how we go about trusting ourselves.
Well, that's an interesting question about how we can build trust in ourselves. Is that also like self-esteem? What is that?
Self-esteem? Yeah, probably. I don't know. I think self-esteem probably relates more to how we think about ourselves, the thoughts we have and the labels that we give to ourselves and our mind, where trust is something more primitive.
Mm-hmm.
It's more gut kind of stuff.
How do you build your trust in that? If it's gut, if it's instinct, then is that an instinct you can develop?
Oh, well, yeah, sure. The first thing I teach people in the first 2 weeks, or not always, but sometimes, is, oh, where does it hurt? And they say, it hurts in my heart.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, well, what is the hurt in your heart like? And they say, well, it's a sharp, stabbing pain. And I say, well, where in your heart is the sharp, stabbing pain? And they say, it's right in the center of my heart. And then I say to them, if that sharp, stabbing pain in the middle of your heart could talk, what would it say to you? And that begins the whole process then of being aware. You start physiologically, see, because our body, our feelings are related to our body, our physical nature.
Right.
So we can identify where the pain is And once you begin to notice and identify it, you're on the track of trusting. That's step number one.
Notice and identifying how that's playing out
in your body. Where is it exactly? Where is it? What's it like? How can I describe it? Does it have a picture? Does it have an image? Does it sound? Does it talk to me?
Wow. That's powerful.
It's powerful, but it's basic. It's 101 in terms of who am I as a person. Right now, I'm a person who has this incredibly stabbing pain right in the middle of my heart. Now, can you imagine the power that statement would have if you can say it in a non-defensive way to a cheating spouse?
Mm.
You follow what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
It's a very powerful way of communication. In other words, instead of just saying, I'm hurt by this,
mm-hmm.
or I feel terrible or something.
Right. The more distinctions that we can make, the more power we have. And part of what we want to do when we've been betrayed is we want to reclaim our personal power. It's been destroyed, at least from our own point of view, not in reality, but from our point of view, we no longer have personal power. This person is abandoning us and choosing someone over me, and I must be crap.
Mm. Well, this is some amazing stuff you've unlocked here, and I'm sure that we could go on and on.
I enjoy talking to you, Claire. You have a good way of following and also adding to, so I appreciate that. It's easy to talk to you.
Well, I'm glad, and I think this has been very powerful for all the people who've had a chance to listen to it. This one is just, I know, going to get a lot of attention because cheating is something that we've all thought about or experienced in our lives in some way, and it's not at all uncommon, although I don't think, and it's amazing to me, like you said, I don't think people are very, therapists certainly aren't well trained in helping us deal with it. So maybe a good thing would be for us to get smart about dealing with it in an effective and powerful way. So thanks for all your time and your energy. And I'm sure I'll be talking to you again sometime soon. Meanwhile, this is Claire Casey, and you've been listening to Dr. Bob Huizinga at breakfreefromtheaffair.com and saveamarriageforever.com. And I'm so glad you were here. Thanks so much to all of you who have been listening, and to you, Dr. Huizinga.
Thank you, Claire.